Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode. All right, everybody. Welcome to this week's interview. We're sitting here with Harjeet Mungat. Am I saying that correct, Harjeet?
You are saying that correct. Yes, sir.
And of course, the number one coattail rider in dentistry, Sully Sullivan.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us here at the Millennial Dentist Podcast again. Always live from the retreat.
Always try. So, we're here at the 3D Retreat in Wake Forest, North Carolina, just north of Raleigh. And Harjeet is here for our implant continuum. And we asked him to sit down. And we thought we would talk to Harjeet about self-serving interests first. And then, of course, a little bit about himself and what's going on. So, I think the first thing we'll say is, Harjeet, how did you get here to the implant program?
How did I get here? Well, I've been placing implants for the last maybe 2 years. I've been doing it free-handed, which is not exactly correct. And so I needed to up my game a little bit.
So I have a question. I'm going to interrupt you a little bit there.
Go ahead.
When you say, so you've been placing implants.
Sure.
How many implants have you been placing? Like one a month, one a quarter, et cetera. And then when you say, what has led you to doing it free-handed and doing it to now make you want to do it differently?
I learned that it was probably best to do free-handed implants first, which I realize now was probably not the correct way of going about it. However, that's how I started. So I'd say my first year, I probably placed 1 to 2 implants a month.
It's not bad.
Not at all.
It's good.
Second year, I probably placed about 5 implants a month. And then when I got to that point, I realized that I needed to change, like, immediately. I needed a CT. I needed to do things better. Or I could get myself into trouble.
Was it because you restored them and were like, well, it's going to have been a little better? all of a sudden, you're doing all custom abutments.
Absolutely. You do more than one on a single case or right next to each other. It's hard to do it without a guide, without a CT. It'll scare you a little bit.
That's how it was for me, too, because I learned the same way you did. I learned free-handed. And honestly, it was the restorative side of things that really made me, because I thought the whole goal was just get an implant to integrate.
Right.
And then you realize that's not that hard. Getting it in the right position is the hard part.
Right. Yeah, that is exactly where I ended up. And then on top of that, I was like, well, if I get this technology in my office, it can be more efficient. I can do things faster. I can do things more predictable. So I needed a place to go where I could learn that.
How'd you hear about us?
Because
I'm not advertising India abroad.
Well, yeah. Right. No, I just went where the other Indian was teaching this stuff. I decided this was a good idea. This was a place for me. No. I have known about this course or this organization for about a year or two now. So I've been following along, you know, seeing what courses you guys have to offer. And this one really struck me because it was exactly what I need when I needed it.
Good. We're glad to be here when you're ready.
Yeah.
So what'd you think, what made you stay at the retreat?
I think that was a no-brainer.
Before you got here. Now, clearly you know it's a no-brainer once you get here. But talk to me about before you get here.
Well, I thought that if there was a chance, you know, when like-minded people eat together or spend time together, they end up talking about things that that relate to them both professionally and personally. And you end up meeting a lot of like-minded people from all over the country that I think it's a good experience.
Good. How has it
having
been?
Having said that, we have talked a lot of shop. Like, I'm pretty sure tomorrow when I drive back, like, I'm going to need an entire day just to not talk anymore shop. But I mean, I appreciate but isn't, it, but that's it's a
what,
lot of shop.
But that's what this is about for me. Well, let me back up. It's about, that's what I think this group wanted. Okay.
Yeah.
So like for example, the last group, we talked shop, don't get us wrong, but we spent more time doing fun things as the last group. But this group has gravitated more towards talking shop, and I think a lot of that has to do with where everybody is in their career and their life.
Right.
How's your experience been at the retreat?
Awesome.
Yeah, there's air conditioning?
Yes, there is air conditioning.
Let's talk about
pool.
Talk
the
about
pool's not heated, but it's good.
I mean, talk a little about the meal plan. You know, what about the food here? Talk about the chef.
Sully's cooking is half decent. Darren rolled up an omelet in an incredible way this morning. I never seen that.
Unbelievable.
That was different.
That was awesome.
That's good.
I have one question. So, sure. You know, implants tend to get people here, but what did you think about the extraction, socket preservation, stuff like that? Because on one hand, I think that's one of the most underappreciated coming in, but appreciated things leaving, I guess. Did you pick up any pearls from that?
Yes. Yes. And I'll tell you what I think part of the issue is that implants have suddenly become the buzzword. Like, I want to place implants. I want to place implants right away. And you can go somewhere and learn how to place implants. I'm not criticizing any way which way that you would learn, but
please don't.
you wanna learn in a way that your colleagues are doing it, or you know, as good as specialists would be doing it.
Right, it's important.
And I feel like that's part of the issue. Is part of the issue is that as general dentists, we sit there and we're like, well, you know, we sit there and we restore implants, and we sit there thinking to ourselves, well, you know, maybe I could have placed that better. Well, if we don't know how to place them, then we don't know the answer to that question. So now you're sitting there thinking to yourself, well, if I get the CT and I learn from some of the folks that are placing implants as well as a specialist, then I can do it myself, and whatever I can't manage, I can refer to them.
Cool. All right. So I want to talk, look, I know you're here for implants, and it's a great course. We want everybody to come to it. The Digital Implant Continuum, contact Meredith Cooper-Jones at 855-332-2285. Is that the number? It's just in case. I don't know my own phone number. Yeah, absolutely. I want to focus on, I want to ask you about some things you took away from our after-hours conversation last night and today.
Yeah, there was a lot. There was a lot to unpack. I'm still unpacking it, actually.
All right. What stuck out to you the most?
I would say basically reverse engineering what you want to do in your practice and how, and starting from there. I think the biggest problem is that we end up falling into practices like we talked about last night, where the practice drives you, the patient population drives you to think that you should do things a certain way.
Yeah. And I think I would argue that most of us got into dentistry, or we dreamed in dental school that dentistry was the profession where you control and own your own business and control what you do.
Oh, yeah.
You go golfing,
you know, 2-3 days a week and and then just go into the office when you have to. And that's not really how most offices are set up.
No, it's not. Okay. So clarity was an important thing yesterday
sure,
for you.
Sure.
Yeah. What else did you pick up from today's after hours when we sat in the what are we calling the bar area? The bar gathering area? Place?
The gallery.
Yeah.
The galley.
It's not a galley.
GT, one thing that I kind of saw, or it felt like you kind of gravitated towards, was when we started talking about mindset and how it's hard to switch off the mindset of grinding when grinding's what got you here, but somehow how that mentality can hold you back. Talk a little bit about kind of what.
Well, I think you're right. Like, so you know, from a background perspective, we were, or our original flagship practice is very much a PPO-driven practice, and it was based off of how many patients can we get in the door, how many procedures can we do in a single day, without a single thought of what that costs the practice, or what that costs you personally.
Or what that procedural mix is.
Correct. And if you never look at what it is that you're doing, and you just kind of jump on a moving train and go, you get stuck in that mindset. And true. I think that's where I am right now.
How many of us listening agree with that statement? Yeah.
I want my chairs to be full. I want to be busy, because if I'm not busy, if I'm sitting in my office, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
And the hard part is even when we start to train, like shift our mindset, we've trained our team for so long that that could be a challenge.
Like what would happen if you added another column to your practice?
Oh man, I think all hell would break loose right now. When I added a third hygiene, hell broke loose, which actually the fact that we added hygiene, something that probably wasn't as productive of some of the other things that I could have been doing in a chair, I think it was kind of detrimental, even though we were like, yes, you know, hooray, we have
more patients,
provider and more patients and three hygiene. Really wasn't worth what I thought it was.
I would like to see dentistry move to a model, and Sully and I disagree with this, okay? I would like to see dentistry move to a model where it's one dentist, one hygienist.
Yeah, or, I mean, no, I mean,
I think realistically, no hygienist. No hygienist sounds great when times are great.
Right.
No hygienist becomes problematic when we have economic dips.
Right.
And hygiene is a fundamental process of making your practice recession proof.
Right. Agree.
Yeah, and I think that's, I don't necessarily disagree with you. I think, in my opinion, the region, like, I think what we both view hygiene as is a loss leader, and that the production of hygiene is not necessarily based off the production that they do, but the at-bats that we get to diagnose dentistry.
That's right.
And so for me, I think, I would love a one hygiene model, but I also think that the majority of us need more at-bats because we still struggle with some of the things like
communicating
and doing things that where we don't have as good a success. We need the more at-bats to be successful, to get to what we want.
I think it also speaks to the patient population that you have existing versus the one that you're trying to build.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if your patient population walks in, or they're always used to us filing their insurance claims, talking about insurance, being about insurance, then the first thing they're going to ask you when you tell them what you need is, does my insurance pay for
that? Way.
Right? So they've been trained. They've been basically trained for that way.
But who trained them?
So
we did.
We did.
Yeah.
Culturally.
Our profession did.
We did. Yeah, we did that. And then
our 70s and 80s and 90s leaders trained us that way.
But I can see it both ways. Like, say you started up a practice and you said, I'm just going to be fee for service. Anybody that walks through my doors, I will file insurance, but we're going to collect what we need to collect.
Sure.
Versus what Sully's saying is like, well, we have however many thousand people walking through the door. So I can offer the services I can offer to whoever, however many thousands of people, because you guys are already accepting insurance, so those people are walking through the door.
No, I believe
so in those are the two different, I think, warring. Yeah.
I believe in at-bats. I'm a believer in insurance. I'm a proponent of practices taking insurance.
Right.
I'm a big proponent of that because I think it's a easier model. I think it gives you more at-bats, as you're saying. But I think what happens is we lose sight. The busyness dictates our business.
I also think, like in our practice, I could speak to it, that insurance becomes accidentally red tape for us because we start talking about it too much. Yeah. We start saying to a patient, well, this is how much it's going to cost for an implant, a tooth. And here we are starting talking about insurance.
But when the patient like didn't even ask.
Like we talked about earlier, this basically you put the barrier up yourself.
Yeah, I agree with that statement. But I'm a big believer in taking insurance to give you at-bats. It's a way to recession-proof your practice. It gives you the opportunity to scale if that's what you choose to do. And then it gives you the opportunity to cut back if you want to be a smaller practice.
Right.
But not enough of us take the opportunity to cut back. So let me ask you this question.
Sure.
Why have you not cut back on? Because you have a busy practice.
Right.
By all definitions, it's busy.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But why haven't you cut back?
Let's give the listeners a little bit of background perspective, on the current state of your practice.
Okay.
Kind of, if you don't mind, just like.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So, my father opened our practice in 1984. He retired probably 2015, 2016. So our original practice is very much established, I would say. So we switched from 2 hygiene to 3 hygiene maybe 2-3 years ago. My father retired maybe 2 years after I joined him. So we are, you know, in our community, we are a well-established practice. And when you have a well-established practice that has accepted insurance for as long as we've accepted insurance, we basically have found ourselves in a situation where we are very busy, which is a super blessing. We are very bread and butter, which, not that I'm trying to get away from that, but I'm trying to build something else so that we can, you know, focus on other things. So that's basically who we are. That's how I ended up in this position.
And typically you'd say hygiene's booked out.
Hygiene is booked out. 6 months. Everybody gets a 6 month appointment and we're booked out. I mean, there's not even space for any new patients with hygiene currently.
And then doctor side, you're booked out.
4 or 5 weeks.
4 or 5 weeks.
So if I wanted to get an implant, which you're here learning, when could you see me?
That's the problem.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family. T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
Yeah. That would be 4 or 5 weeks from now.
Yeah. And you've been aware of that. Or do you think that, like, what
is that normal? Does that just seem like smart or normal? Or
obviously we've drawn a lot of attention to it this weekend.
I think we've normalized it. Okay. I think that as a practice culture, we've thought that, again, having butts in chairs means that the practice is doing well.
Almost to go so far to say you're proud of it.
You
as in plural, like dentistry is proud of that.
Yes, dentistry is proud of that. Yes, I think that's part of the problem, is that we don't recognize the fact. But on the other side of it, like we were discussing, having an hour blocked off or an hour and a half blocked off for next week for an implant or for a patient that I don't even know if I have is scary.
Okay,
for
a lot of people, right? I want to give you devil's advocate to that.
Sure.
For someone that's booked out 4 to 5 weeks, how quickly could you fill a spot tomorrow morning for an hour and a half?
Quickly. And that's right.
See, and so to me, the concept is you will be more productive whether you do that implant or not by just, like, I believe that if for busy practices, okay, right. For practices that are booked out some time, I believe if you can't get to our model of block and priority scheduling, if you could just say every week we're going to have a free-for-all on Tuesday afternoon and we won't schedule anybody till Monday morning for Tuesday afternoon, you'll find a way to put the most productive, important things in that you found the week before will magically go into, like, literally if you just said it's going to be a free-for-all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, unscheduled free-for-all.
You talked about the emergencies, the amount of root canal emergencies that you...
Well, that's the whole thing is, like, if we do any same day, like, say a patient comes in for a limited exam and they need endo, if I do that endo during lunch, that's probably the most profitable thing. Yeah. I will do all day. And the only thing is because I work through lunch and I decided that we were going to do it that time.
But what's the cost to your team and to your practice culture of working through lunch?
Dad.
It doesn't go well, right? It doesn't typically go well.
Yeah. Right? And then what happens to our patients and their expectations when they know we'll work through lunch?
They go up.
Yeah. And they expect that, right? Right. And I'm glad you brought that up because I would tell you what most people will tell us when they say I'm booked out 4 to 5 weeks and I say, what would you do if a patient said yes to an implant? You'd be like, well, I'll just stay late.
Yeah, I think I'm realizing that it's not much of a, yeah, no, I wouldn't want to do
because
that.
I'll stay late.
No, I wouldn't want to do that. Like I personally, I have a young family. Like I'm not staying pat. That's me personally.
You'll come in early.
I'd rather come in early
Friday,
or
whether it's late or early or during lunch, I'm saying you'll find non-hours. You'll extend your business hours.
Right.
And when does Best Buy extend their business hours for us?
They don't.
Okay. Besides planned Black Fridays and stuff like that. But when do they, hey, we're booked out. We're selling everything. Let's extend hours. Harjeet wants to come in today at 12 because he works until 5 and he can't come in, right? They don't, right?
Right.
And so to me, it's there's so much we need to take from other businesses and prioritize. And let's think about this. Again, because I'm on the retail model kick, because we talked about that today, right?
Right.
John, we talked about the retail model.
Right.
What do the retail models put at the front of their stores?
Their product.
Well, no, but more specifically, what kind of products? The most profitable products,
right.
Correct?
Right.
And so they're prioritizing what they make the most on and what they want to sell more of.
Right.
Not, you know, and I don't want to make it saying that they're prioritizing profits.
Right.
But indirectly, they're selling what they want to sell most of. So we're not prioritizing what we want to do the most of in dentistry.
Right. I'm going
to
look
not to go
what
on
was that, Sully?
I'm going to look at stores totally different now.
Yeah. You guys should watch a little bit on how retail is set up. It's a science.
Home Depot now and see, like, what are they putting
Why is Home Depot selling $2 Snicker bars at the checkout counter? It's Home freaking Depot.
So I have a question.
Yes, sir.
So where does patient retention fall into all this?
Patient retention is important.
For example, you know, if you have 25 new patient blocks set aside and you have Mrs. Jane Doe gives you a call and she's been your patient for 20 years and you say, you know, you don't have the room for...
I don't ever say I don't have the room.
Yeah, but you get what I'm saying. Like, where does patient retention fall into place if you are...
Mrs. Jane Doe, I apologize that you've fallen off the schedule. We'll be happy to work you in. Our next available opening is...
Right.
I think Sully's
solution is, let's bring another provider on board to be able to see...
Sure, and that is the long-term solution, absolutely. But my argument right now in that is most of us are using that solution before we've really fixed some of the chaos
right
in our practice. And all you're doing is doubling. I mean, I don't mean any offense to this, GT. If you brought in another provider into your practice, all you do is double the chaos.
Yeah, likely.
And I'll argue you'll exponentially make it worse.
You don't double the chaos. It gives you breathing room for a moment until it... But then it fills right back up.
And it's worse.
But you need to have the established systems in place before you onboard that person.
Yes and no.
But with the ability to onboard that person, you can then do more dentistry.
But you don't. The big mistake.
Which comes first?
The big mistake is.
The systems should come first, right?
Go ahead, Sully.
The big thing that I see most people miss is that they think you can't prioritize and change your schedule until you get the new doctor, and you can. You know, you can do exactly the dentistry that you would do with another provider now if you just prioritized it. And piggybacking off the, you know, the lady that you were talking about, that patient that's been there forever, is I've told Dad this, is that to me it's hard because I think we give more loyalty to our patients than our patients give to us.
Absolutely.
A lot of times.
That's definitely an issue.
Because that patient that's calling you fell off your schedule at some point, correct?
Right.
They prioritize something else in their life. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
Right.
But they prioritize something else. And now because it becomes important to them, you have to drop and adjust your business model for them.
Right. But that doesn't mean that patients in ReCare don't have issues either.
Right. So let's come back to what you asked.
Sure.
You're adding 25 new patients a month, when right now you don't have space for them in essence. What are you going to do with the recall patients? Here's what I'm going to argue, okay? dentistry, so many people in dentistry have put so much emphasis on working the recall system. Just stop working it. Stop begging
Let
people
them
to
call
come in.
When they want to come back.
Stop begging people to come in.
Right.
Work on what you want to prioritize. Now, right. If you're a practice that doesn't want new patients.
Dude, that's good.
And you want to prioritize.
Right.
You're going to steal that too, Sully?
That's a good one. I am totally
And you're going to prioritize
Why are we
recall,
prioritizing
then focus on recall.
So
but how many of us have went to seminars and it's all about how do we get recall people brilliant. Back in our office?
Which, by the way, they don't have dentistry to do. It's just new clinic.
Yeah, it's
they didn't prioritize you. Brilliant. So yeah, but I'm not saying it's not important. But let me ask you this. Okay, Ben is sitting in the audience here. Let me ask you this, Ben. Would you prefer to prioritize people that are asking to come to your office or you calling people and begging them to come back? Well, the answer is obvious. But my point being in that is that's not what anybody has taught us. What they've taught us is beg people to come back.
Right.
And look, if you're in a scarcity model or if you're hurting for patients, beg them to come back. I would be the first one. Dude, I'd be out there flipping signs, begging people to come in. If that's what it took to provide for my family, in a heartbeat, I would. Okay? I would.
So I think we were talking about this, other participants that are here, about September and October this year and COVID, mm-hmm. and how there were a lot of openings in the schedule because of the way that the recall mm-hmm. cycle got shifted. Our office personally did some of the best. We had some of the best months.
Yeah.
And the reason I think is because we were bringing in new patients and those patients needed active treatment. And we got it done.
And those patients were seeking you out.
But if
versus
you
seeking them out.
If you would have told me in July that, I was looking at the schedule, basically.
You're talking about last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was terrified looking at the schedule, thinking that we have, we're going to have three hygiene sitting on these days in September.
You're going to see 20% less patients and have 20% more production.
But so here's my question to everybody, and it's a rhetorical question. If we saw that happen, why would we not want more of that? What in our mind made us want to say, well, that was horrible. I saw 20% less patients and I did 20% more. Let me just go back to the old way of doing things.
We just jump back up on the hamster wheel.
Because, yeah, I get it. I get it. I'm asking rhetorical questions. But, I don't understand who made these rules in dentistry, that we should beg people to come back at the expense of people that are begging us to come there. I mean, how many of us have heard it put that way? And it's illogical, correct? Okay, and then you ask me the question, well, where do I make space for these new patients? Stop begging people to come in and the space will be there.
Right, right.
And those, by the way, and look, recall is important. Don't get me wrong. The back door is important, okay? But it's not everything. It's too much effort. They end up canceling more often, on these patients on these appointments anyway, and there's an opportunity cost. And I think there's not enough time spent on thinking of, the old saying: when you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. So when you say yes to reactivating an 18-month-old recall patient, you're saying no to a new patient.
Right, well, and it may be a situation where you have a recall patient that you've been banging your head off of the wall. Mm-hmm. Please replace number 19. Please replace number 19. Right. And they never do it.
Yeah.
And Miss Jane Doe wants to come to your office, and guess what she wants to do? She wants to
replace number 19.
Right. Well, their new patients typically are more receptive to our continued growth, right? So that when I start taking photos on these patients and they're like, why are you taking photos on me? The new patients have they know no different. They're a clean, fresh slate.
You're establishing the rapport.
Exactly. Right, you're establishing that this is the way we do things versus I will tell you that the hardest patients in our practice are the patients that have been here for 30 or 40 years. They're the ones that struggle to accept treatment, that want to just patch things and be reactive, et cetera. And it's the new patients who are thankful to be there, who leave the most glowing
reviews. Not to put all the patients in a box, but I think that is true.
Yeah, no, you're right.
I think that partially does happen.
Again, I'm going to come back to who made the rules in dentistry, and I want to come back to a fundamental point on that. The common rules in dentistry that most of us follow today were made in a time when general dentistry was crown and bridge. Okay, it was restorative dentistry.
That's a great point.
And today, general dentistry is so much more. I'll argue the least amount of what we do is, well, for many of us, it's crown and bridge. You know, Rick Sullivan, in the 1980s, 1990s, you were a dentist, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. Did the prototypical general dentist do at Molar Endo? I mean, I asked you a simple question, Rick. Did the typical general dentist do molar endo? And he goes, I did.
Well, let's go. But they didn't. Like, they didn't do sleep. They didn't do ortho.
Yeah, they didn't do implants. Did the typical general dentist do implants?
No.
Did the typical general dentist do any type of orthodontics?
No.
Did clear aligners exist?
No.
Did intraoral cameras exist in the 80s?
Early 90s.
Early 90s, okay. Right. Did electric handpieces exist? What was the most expensive thing you could buy for your practice in the 80s? $4,000, right? $3,000. What is the least expensive thing you can buy for your... You just built an office. What is the least expensive line item you bought?
Oh, my gosh. I have no idea. Handpiece.
A handpiece, probably $1,500.
The bib clip. Yeah,
the bib clip.
The handpiece is probably $1,500, correct? Yeah, but I'm saying the head. The head on the handpiece is $1,000.
To be successful, you had to, like, the model change... Like, there was no prioritized schedule.
The model
schedule
changed. But it's not changed. Even priority schedule. What I'm saying is the most expensive thing was $3,000. Now you can barely get anything for $3,000. And it's not inflation. It's how much technologically and fundamentally our business, our profession has changed. But yet we're still following concepts from the 70s and 80s and 90s.
Yeah, but the other thing
And we think if we throw technology onto it, like if we throw automated recall or automated patient confirmations, like that fixes a fundamentally flawed business model. And that's why DSOs are crushing us, is because they come in with a consumer-focused mindset of meeting people where they're at, prioritizing what they put on the walls, where they put it, what procedures they do, who does it, how they get paid, and that's why they're crushing it.
But that's part of our problem, right? So we were not trained in the corporate world. We're not business people, most of us. So that's the problem, is systematizing our business in a way that the corporations run that we can compete.
But when you say corporations, most dentists say what? Evil.
Oh, yeah. The worst thing ever. But there are things we can take from them. So building it is what's hard.
I don't want us to belabor this too long. Right? I
love belaboring.
I know.
So
that's why I'm moving us along here. So okay. So my question then, GT, is, okay, now that you have... you've seen what you've seen, you've heard what you've heard, you can't unhear stuff. So what's next? Like, how do you feel like you take this back Monday and your team's going to look at you like you saw a ghost?
What do you not take back? You know, what can you not unhear? Or, you know, those are the questions. How does it affect you?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into Full Arch Implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3d-dentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
I think I would say that I never, I thought that it was the other way around. I thought that your patient population essentially dictates what your skill set is, which in some ways it has for me up until this point. So in our patient population, patients need dentures, we make them dentures. Patient need implants, we do that. So we've kind of tried and decided that we were going to be a one-stop shop for everything, and that's what we're going to do. And now I think I realize, and that's why I'm not like, I'm not going to go back and change everything, but I think I realize I know what I need to do slowly in order to be able to get to the end.
Yeah, it's not cold turkey.
Yeah, if I'm like thinking about it now, I'm thinking to myself, well, no, you know, not to sound like a jerk, but I should be doing the dentistry that I want to do because I should think and assume that there is enough of it.
Well, I'm gonna say
right?
that.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I'm gonna say that a little bit differently for you, if you don't mind. You should be doing the dentistry you want to do because you're the senior owner, you own the building and the business, and you should be dictating the terms of your business.
Right.
And what I will also reemphasize is I've never said you should turn away dentures or turn away fillings or any of those things. I just said somebody else should be doing them for you. Not you, I'm saying you plural as a profession.
Right.
I firmly believe that you should, within 5 years
or whatever that is that you don't like doing.
5 years of graduation, you should graduate from whatever doesn't make you happy.
That's a good way of putting it. Whatever doesn't make you happy.
Whatever doesn't make you happy. Dentures stop making me happy. Stop doing them.
Right.
Fillings hold me back and don't make me happy.
If you don't like blood, don't do things about it.
Right. And I think that's something that surprised me last night when you guys were talking about it. Like we don't, you know, like you guys are at a point where it's now like, not that you guys don't present options.
We present the options.
Essentially, what you're saying is like, this is what I do. This is what works in my hands, and this is what I'm going
to
do.
For example, if I went to Lowe's and said I went shirt, and I'm making this up because I don't know if this is correct. Rick Sullivan can correct me. If I went to Lowe's and asked for Sherwin-Williams paint, and Lowe's doesn't sell Sherwin-Williams paint, the typical dentist was running Lowe's and be like, let me go find Sherwin-Williams paint for you.
Right.
Right.
That's true.
And I would just be like, well, unfortunately, I can't sell you Sherwin-Williams, but we got Glidden, you know, right. And I can sell you that.
That's true.
I mean, it's pretty interesting.
What do you think your team's going to say, or how do you
start to convey this to your team when you get back?
I don't think it's going to surprise them totally because we've been kind of pushing towards, I've been pushing towards me doing more, you know, implants, things like that. But the thing is that where we got to before I got here is you want to do all these things. When are you going to have time to do it? And that's basically when I left, that's pretty much where we were at. And I think we would probably stay stuck there until we start making some adjustments.
And the challenge is when do we start making those adjustments?
Yeah, like tomorrow.
It's easy to say, okay, 6 weeks. When I get through this 6 week period of being busy, then I'll make the adjustment.
Yeah.
And then 3 weeks later, like, okay, 6 more weeks.
Well, yeah, like I'm excited about the stuff
Why are you laughing?
Like because tomorrow.
You know, right?
Right. Yeah. Tomorrow, Sully's going to show us digital printing and things like that. And when we were talking about that before, like planning your own cases, printing your own guides, like, I'm ready to take this sprint raise right out of the clinic and put them in my car.
Hey, I'm going to call the police on you.
Run, right. I'll take all your sprint
raise. Meredith, you make a note of that. If we're missing anything, it's him. It's the brown guy.
If I take them back right now, like Sully's right. He's like, you don't have time for any of that. Yeah. I don't. Yeah. I'm too busy doing
class 2. I would like to say that's one thing
I'm... Class 2 composite quadrant dentistry when I could be doing other things that I enjoy. So I think I have to figure out how to chip away at that. Whether that's have someone else do that for our practice or, you know, cut back on the number of patients I'm seeing as a whole. I don't, that all I have to unlock. So
what do you think? It's obviously putting you on the spot on some level, but what would you say is going to be step one in that? Like a tangible thing you're going to try to do next week that starts to move the needle.
Well, I didn't think I was going to be placing as many.
Like your action plan.
I guess. I'll tell you, I didn't think I was going to be placing as many implants as I thought I was going to be placing in year two. So I would say the first thing I want to do is basically figure out how can I place, say, if I really want to place implants or say I want to do crown and bridge, you know, big cases, I have to figure out how I'm going to find the time for it. That would probably be step one.
Ben, how does he find the time for those big cases? Move patients
out.
Cancel some patients.
Right.
Cancel some Postpone some patients.
Right.
How bad do you want it?
Right.
How important is it to you?
Right. So I would say that that would be my step one. Because if I don't have the time to do any of that, I'm not going to be able to do it, really.
Yeah. Well, I think a other symptom we have in dentistry is we believe that the solution to being busy, the solution to being less productive than we would like, is to add more clinical skills, add more services to our repertoire. And that's not incorrect. But I think fundamentally what most practices are missing or are not focusing enough attention on is the patient journey and buying process. We're not spending enough time on better diagnosis, better communication, firm financial arrangements, and priority scheduling. Because what has made me successful in adding these fancy procedures that I'm doing, hybrids, implants, ortho, sleep, all of those things, is that when I didn't have a skill set to make ends meet or to get to a certain level, when all I had was a screw, I learned how to use that screw really well. And because I, by design or by whatever happenstance, I focused on communication. Because all I could sell was fillings and crowns, so I focused on communication to patients so I could sell more fillings and crowns on less patients.
When I graduated in 2014, I got out and a lot of the mentors that I have in the area, they're like, you know, the type of dentistry we were doing is like, here's a hole, fix it. You know, I'm in pain, fix me. And I think over the last few years, as I've gotten more CE, as I've gotten more comfortable clinically, I feel like maybe that, I never thought when I started this that I would be the dentist that's handing someone a comprehensive treatment plan. Mm-hmm. This is what we need to do, and that's it. But I'm already getting to that point where I think that's how probably I need to do it. But I would have never have guessed I was there before. I mean, like, oh, I'll just do this. You know, you have a broken filling, I'll fix this. GT. Forget about data collection. Forget about anything else. We didn't do any of that. It was, there's a problem, I'll throw a Band-Aid on it.
We became mechanics. GT, I think what's amazing is that you're here for an implant program. And you're learning plenty about implants. Would you agree?
Yeah.
But what we've talked about, and I think probably one of the most insightful things you've taken away, is about what your practice could become, if that's what you want. And I think that, to me, is what I've tried to build and surround myself with people who are living and breathing it every day, that there's a different way to do dentistry. It's not a right way or a wrong way. It's your way. And dentistry is a career unlike anything else maybe in that's available that is all about you, or should be all about you. And my goal is to help people take advantage of that, to make it all about what they want. We should take back control of our practices and be in control of whatever it is we want to do. I've met people that don't want to make more money, that just want to have 10 weeks of vacation a year. In fact, I've met people that would say, you know what, I'll make less money if I could have 10 weeks of vacation per year. And dentistry can afford you that. So I think, to me, that's what 3D Dentist is about. That's what this retreat is about. That's what having all of us sitting in this family room together and talking shop is about. Yes, we're here for implants this weekend, but there's more enlightening things that are going on.
And I just appreciate that you're just so thankful to surround yourself with people like that, like you said.
Well, glad everybody but you. Harjeet, what? That's not nice. Harjeet, thank you so much for getting on the thing.
It's been a pleasure.
Right. Meredith, you got to press record.
Work smarter, not harder. We'll see you next time.
Stop stealing my shit, dude.